You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Spencer Hearing. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, March 8th, 2018.
It comes back to if you see or hear something, say something. I would encourage anyone that is, you know, worried about an unsafe condition that could harm the student, staff, or school to call our Safe Schools hotline.
Monroe County Community School Corporation spokesman Andrew Clampett says the district is leaning to concerned parents about school safety. Clampett speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about what actions MCCSC is taking after the Parkland, Florida shooting amid a national push to arm teachers.
Also coming up in the next half hour, it's International Women's Day. Our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks Monroe County residents what women inspire them. That's coming up on Voices in the Street. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb extended the number of counties under an emergency declaration yesterday. The order extends emergency services to LaPorte, Wabash, Noble, Posey, and Warren counties in the northern part of the state. The governor's order brings the total number of counties under an emergency declaration to 31. Emergency declarations due to flooding now affect a third of the state's counties. Near-record amounts of torrential rain led to flash flooding in northern and southern Indiana around Valentine's Day last month. Flooding caused the Ohio and White Rivers to overflow their banks in parts of the state, leading to damaged roadways and bridges. Property damage assessments are underway. The declaration of emergency in a county means emergency services are delayed in responding to incidents. State emergency response teams have been deployed to help and to assess property damage. Amber Kint is a staff member with the state's emergency response team, the Joint Information Center. Kint says state employees are helping property owners assess widespread flooding damage.
Currently, we are still seeing some high levels in northern Indiana and still southern Indiana. As the floodwaters move south, we'll continue to see some elevated river levels in that portion of the state in southern Indiana, both southeast and southwest. We are currently, as a state, doing damage assessments in those homes that were impacted and determining next steps in the extent of damage.
The State Emergency Operations Center is available for support for anyone affected by recent weather and water damage. Kint says the state is helping affected area residents with debris removal.
We definitely encourage all impacted residents to report any uninsured damage. And anyone who is needing to recover from water that has impacted their homes can go to the Department of Homeland Security webpage. That's dhs.in.gov. And there is a link that has quite a few disaster recovery resources that can be accessed, put into one place so that people can find them more conveniently.
Flood assistance shelters have been set up in Jasper, Lake, and Elkhart counties. The state is also providing tetanus shots and water testing services for affected residents. Drone footage from Indiana's Ohio River counties shows several feet of flood water still overflowing riverbanks. The state is not reporting any injuries or deaths as a result of the flooding, but officials say they're keeping an eye on the weather as below-freezing temperatures move across the state over the next week.
A bill increasing regulations on abortion providers and women seeking an abortion is now on Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb's desk. Senate Bill 340 increases the licensing and inspection requirements for abortion providers and clinics. It also increases the data the state collects on women seeking an abortion, requiring them to report abortion complications to the State Department of Health. The bill passed out of the Senate yesterday. It was merged with Senate Bill 123, allowing fire departments to use so-called baby boxes, devices for people to anonymously drop off newborns. Both bills were authored by Republican State Senator Travis Holdman of District 19, just south of Fort Wayne. WFHB reached out to Holdman's office but did not receive a comment by deadline. Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky opposes State Senate Bill 340 but declined a comment until Governor Holcomb makes a decision. The Indianapolis Star reports that Governor Holcomb has yet to signal whether or not he will sign the bill.
The Bloomington City Council accepted 5 proposals that would streamline the city's sidewalk ordinance last night. The city's planning and transportation staff proposed the code changes. Currently, property owners are responsible for installing and maintaining sidewalks adjacent to their properties. This applies even in areas where the city is not likely to expand existing sidewalk networks anytime soon. One of the proposals would eliminate the sidewalk installation requirement in specific areas. Acting Development Services Manager Jackie Scanlon says this particular proposal came out of public feedback about the expense to property owners.
So we are trying to address that issue through removing the requirement for sidewalk installation from existing lots of record for single-family construction on neighborhood streets and also for home occupations.
Scanlon says, in reality, the city's limited sidewalk funding means many neighborhood roads won't get sidewalks in the near future. That makes it difficult for planning staff to tell residents they have to foot the bill for sidewalk installation.
You know, having to explain that to a constituent, to a member of the public is sometimes, you know, complicated. It's a hard conversation to say, yes, we would like for you to expend $5,000, $6,000. No, it is unlikely that that will become part of a larger sidewalk network in the near future. By the time sidewalk comes through here, if it ever does, we would likely have to replace your sidewalk.
Council member Chris Sturbaum felt the proposal went too far. He says the city shouldn't waive its right to ask for help from residents in the future. He introduced an amendment to strike the proposal and explained his reasoning.
The argument is, in the long run, we can't foresee the needs, every need that every single-family resident infill lot is going to come into play. And, you know, the difficulty of getting right-of-ways, that when we try to acquire right-of-ways, there are real legal problems. We can't even ask them to donate them because it's too complicated and it's strangely against the Constitution to ask them if they could donate land without giving them just compensation for it. So it's messy to go halfway and say, okay, we'll waive this, but you could then promise to let us have the use of the land later. So the cleanest thing is to maintain that determinant sidewalk variance the way it is now.
Scanlon acknowledges the change would currently affect only about 10 properties, but she says, quote, that money to that property owner is real, unquote.
Just to be clear, I think kind of when we're saying, okay, no more determinant sidewalk variances, that's too broad. That's not what we're saying. If you don't live on a local road, you still have to put in sidewalk. If you, you know, if you front on 2nd Street and, you know, if you're building and there's no sidewalk there, you have to put in sidewalk. It's our local, smaller neighborhood roads that, based on past practice of what's been built and what's been funded, are going to have to be low priority,
infill,
that those would be exempted.
Infill, right?
Yes.
Infill, single-family residents on existing legal lots of record.
That's on neighborhood streets.
We're addressing on neighborhood streets.
Scanlon went on to add another concern prompting the change, that the financial hardship to property owners is an obstacle to creating new housing stock. Sturbaum's amendment ultimately failed. Bloomington City Council members gave 2 reasons for their lack of support. First, the code change affects a small number of property owners. Second, the cost to those property owners outweighs the benefit to the city in keeping the installation requirement. Councilmember Dorothy Granger proposed another amendment aimed at reducing sidewalks that are only the length of one property.
It just adds a section in the below the purpose section that states basically if somebody is building a house next to property that has a sidewalk, that new construction should also have a sidewalk. I know we've talked about sidewalks to nowhere, and I think this kind of eliminates that a little bit. And I also believe that just because a neighborhood is small and doesn't mean that people might not want sidewalks there.
Granger's amendment passed. Other changes to the code streamline the criteria for variances and strike language requiring bicycle and pedestrian facilities at home businesses.
Bloomington Black Lives Matter is holding a call-in campaign to convince city officials to abandon the purchase of an armored car. The call-in campaign is urging residents to call Mayor John Hamilton's office and leave a message stating they oppose the purchase. The campaign began yesterday and ends at the end of this month. The Bloomington Police Department's acquisition of a Lenco Bearcat armored truck has been the subject of intensive community debate over the past month. BPD Chief Mike Dekoff has repeatedly asserted the purchase is necessary to safeguard a special police unit, the Critical Incident Response Team, or CIRT. Community activists have signaled their objections at city town hall meetings and by disrupting Mayor Hamilton's third State of the City address. Activists have balked at the $225,000 price tag, a lack of community input over the purchase, and warn of a growing national trend towards the militarization of police departments.
Renowned author Salman Rushdie is expected to be presented with an honorary degree from Indiana University Bloomington on March 29th. Rushdie will be speaking at the IU Auditorium. The author of 13 novels and the winner of the Man Booker Prize, Rushdie is perhaps best known for the subsequent controversy surrounding his novel The Satanic Verses in 1988. The book was labeled as a premier insult to Islam by Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran, who issued a fatwa on Rushdie. The government of Iran has since stated that the fatwa, an order for Rushdie's murder, no longer stands, although the Islamic Revolutionary Guards in Iran have contradicted that statement. The publication of the Satanic Verses incited violence and death threats against bookstores and retailers across the world, and is still banned in several countries. A spokesperson for IU could not be reached for a comment about the possible controversy of awarding an honorary degree on Rushdie from Indiana University. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Spencer Hearing.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation held two town hall meetings this week to reassure parents of students and to canvass the community about school safety concerns. WFHB News Director Wes Martin spoke with MCCSC's Andrew Clampett about the meetings and school safety policy in the district.
And I was wondering if it would be possible to speak with you a little bit about whether or not that's school policy or moving forward if the legislature would consider arming teachers or requiring teachers to be armed.
You know, to repeat what Dr. DeMuth said, you know, we're governed by state and federal statute. If there is, in fact, a law that we have to do something along the lines of arming teachers, of course, we'll be in compliance of the law, but we have no plans of doing arming teachers at this time. In terms of policy, at our last board meeting, we updated a standing policy just to acknowledge that our school resource officer is the only armed person that we allow on school grounds, to also allow police officers, because we have many extracurricular activities, et cetera, where there are law enforcement on school grounds. And so we just updated our policy to acknowledge that, you know, those officers will indeed have, you know, weapons on them whilst doing their jobs.
And those officers are primarily at things like football games or basketball games,
yeah,
or public.
Yeah, at almost all of our extracurricular activities at the high schools, there are, security at those events.
And just to clarify, it's currently not legal for a parent or anybody outside of the administration to come to a school event or onto school grounds with a weapon of any kind. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Mr. Clampett, we've seen the legislature advance another bill in response to the Parkland tragedy. That would allow for the blocking of school doors up to 3 minutes in order to verify or have a teacher or a faculty member verify that there is, in fact, a fire or some kind of emergency. And this reportedly came out of the Parkland shooter apparently pulled the fire alarm in order to get students out and in order to murder students. And I was wondering if you or MCCSC had any comment as to that door blocking or fire alarm blocking legislation, or whether or not that would inform.
So in terms of our safety protocols and our processes, those are reviewed regularly with our staff and administration. As you know, each time there's a scenario like this, you know, those processes are gone through. They're reviewed and practiced again. You know, as we're always looking to improve. And so, you know, while I can't speak to legislation that is not in place yet, you know, in terms of if and when new legislation is passed, you know, we'll certainly, you know, we'll comply with whatever those laws are. But, you know, currently there's a plan for each school, and they're separate, and they cover, I believe they're, you know, no less than 16 pages up to 30 pages of plans through some different scenarios that, you know, our staff are trained on, and, you know, those are the plans that we follow and review.
And are there any plans to review those security procedures in the wake of either public comment and discussion or new legislation coming through the short session?
Absolutely. We announced, if not the day of the Parkland shooting, or it was within a couple of days thereafter, that we were doing just that, going through all of our processes and procedures and you know, reviewing them, making sure we were refreshed on them, and see if there's anything that we needed to update. But those are not black and white documents. They're constantly being updated, reviewed, and, you know, just to make sure that as our children are within our school walls and on our school grounds, you know, safety is our utmost priority.
And could you comment to some of the public comment that was received at a couple of events that I believe you had at Bloomington High School North and South with regards to...
You know, we had two safety meetings this week. One was the first one on Monday was at South. The second one was on Tuesday at North. We had our assistant superintendent, Dr. Andrea Mobley, walk through a safety panel, if you will, of specific to each school with our director of student services, our school resource officer, Sergeant Tate from the BPD. Walked them through several different scenarios, several questions, you know, talked about, you know, security. But then, you know, the community had an opportunity to submit questions, and, you know, for about 90 minutes each time, very healthy level of conversation. It was exactly what we designed those safety talks to be, was a forum for community members to ask questions, to, you know, get direct feedback from the superintendent and, you know, our safety teams.
Mr. Clampett, just to go back to my original question, I was just wondering, are teachers at MCCSC schools allowed to bring guns onto school campuses?
No.
There are no plans currently to put into place a change in that policy.
In terms of a policy that would allow them to be armed?
Correct.
No plans.
Okay, and Mr. Clampett, do you have any additional comments or anything else that you think our listeners should know, either with regards to student safety or gun policy in MCCSC?
Absolutely. You know, so much, it comes back to if you see or hear something, say something. I would encourage anyone that is, you know, worried about an unsafe condition that could harm the student, staff, or school to call our Safe Schools hotline at 812-330-2494, and that is a confidential hotline that can be reached at all hours.
Mr. Clampett, just before I let you go, we had this incident at Fairview where a couple of students had posed with what appeared to be weapons or guns at the time. And then that was reported and went through kind of the chain of command at MCCSE. Could you speak to what that threat assessment process looks like?
Yeah, so we handle all of those types of situations very seriously. We were notified by the BPD of the incident. It happened over a weekend. But specifically in terms of a disciplinary situation, you know, those are private to the students' files on a case-by-case basis. But that comes back to if you see something or hear something, say something. And there were, you know, posts that were alarming to certain people, so they reported them. We certainly at all times want to cooperate with the local authorities and let them, you know, do what they're experts at.
Mr. Clampett, thank you so much for speaking with us.
And again, that was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with MCCSC spokesman Andrew Clampett about student safety concerns in the school district.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
March 8th is International Women's Day, a tradition that has been observed in the U.S. since 1909, first known as International Women's Day. This week, we ask you, how do you celebrate? What do you think of the current state of women's affairs? And who are the women that inspire you the most? Do you have any plans for International Women's Day?
No.
Do you have any particular women that really inspire you?
Judith Leister.
Yeah?
Tell me about her. Famous artist
from
the 1600s.
Right on.
Yep, she captured women in the everyday norm, and it was amazing.
Do you are you aware that tomorrow's International Women's Day?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am.
Do you have any women that particularly inspire you?
Is it okay if she's fictional?
Sure.
Leslie Knope.
Leslie Knope. She is pretty inspiring.
Yeah, I love her.
Is her work ethic and all that?
Yeah. As a teacher, I see what she does, and I like to, like, you know, if I'm in a sticky situation, I'm like, what would Leslie do? She would be forceful, but, like, kind and have a specific idea in mind of what she wants to accomplish.
Do you have any women that really inspire you throughout history?
Throughout history?
Yeah. Or currently.
Yeah. Well, I really like my mom, and I like Michelle Obama.
Excellent.
Yep.
Excellent. How do you view the state of women's affairs today?
I think it's a state where we're making progress, but it's kind of lost some of the drive that was behind it originally.
Do you have any women in particular that really inspire you or you like?
Definitely my teammates. I'm actually on my way to get shoes for the little 500. So.
Excellent. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hey, are you aware that tomorrow's International Women's Day?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you have any women that you like to celebrate in particular?
Not really.
Not really. What do you think of the current state of women's affairs?
I think that we're not represented properly in any sort of way, not in the life that we lead, and not at home, and not at work, and not in politics, certainly.
What do you think of the current state of women's affairs?
Maybe getting better now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I'm glad that. There's more of a movement now. People are recognizing, you know, more things that women have had to go through.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Hey, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Not bad. How can I help you?
Are you just going to ask, are you aware that tomorrow is International Women's Day?
Yes, I am, actually.
Right on. Do you?
My sweetheart always reminds me that.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Do you have anybody in particular that really inspires you, or?
Oh, my gosh. Sojourner Truth, Rosa Parks, certainly, music, Ella Fitzgerald.
Wow, yeah.
In the arts, Frida Kahlo. There's just so many women that have contributed substantially. Virginia Woolf in literature. There are wonderful individuals these days doing very, very courageous things. Women of all ages. It's really a good day to celebrate.
Am you aware that tomorrow's International Women's Day?
I am.
Yeah? Do you plan on celebrating anyway?
I am. I'm going to the Buskirk Chumley Theater to see A League of Their Own.
Ah, exciting. Exciting. Is there any particular woman that you like to celebrate in particular?
Susan Ferentinos, who is my wife.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are you aware that tomorrow's International Women's Day?
No.
Oh, do you have any women that really inspire you throughout history?
Yeah, my mom, my wife.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, Alex Davis, and Andrew McKieran, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Anthony Gomez. Our engineer today is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Spencer Hearing.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.